Hi, welcome back to Webcamps TV. I'm your host, Brady Gaster, and again, we are here with Dan Roth, who is a PM on the ASP.NET team. And you saw him a couple months back. He did a really awesome show on Web API when Web API was kind of new and kind of evolving a little bit. Well, as you may know, it's out now. So, or is it beta out or RC out?
Release Canada. All of MVC 4 Release Canada is now out.
All of MVC, yeah.
We got other guys included.
Cool. We have a stream of announcements. I think I got 5 release announcements in my inbox yesterday, and this is one of them. So we're going to start to talk about that. But first, Dan wants to give you some updates on the ASP.NET world. Specifically, what's new in ASP.NET MVC 4 RC?
That's right. Talk about the differences between beta and the recent release candidate. I think one of the really cool things about this release is that like just a couple months ago, we went open source. All of our stuff, MVC, web pages, web API, is all in our new Coplex project, ASP.NET webstack.coplex.com. And we announced that for the first time, we're going to be accepting contributions from third parties. And actually, we have done that. Over the past 2 months, we've had about 10 or so from the community. Our contributors are listed on the Coplex site. Say thank you to all of them. Some nice features, some nice bug fixes. We had one check-in that added support for like patch and options and head HTTP attributes for MVC, which was great. Proving some of the unit test projects. It's been nice, and we hope to get more.
Awesome. Actually, I saw one the other day. Hopefully the inventor of this is watching. I saw an interesting a web API attributes library, and I thought to myself, that should be a pull request. So if you're out there and you're watching, you should submit that, because that was a neat invention.
Yeah, open up an issue in our issue tracker, let us know, and we can start talking about it. We're definitely looking at those things.
So we're moving forward with ASP.NET. We've got open source contributions coming in now. We are listening. We are taking pull requests. I think we have some new templates too, right?
We have some new functionality, actually quite a bit of functionality. The team has been, I would say, hard at work from beta to RC. A lot of things have changed, particularly in the web API space, I would say. Let me go ahead and open up Visual Studio 2012 RC. If you're going to use MVC 4 RC, make sure you're using all the release candidate releases together. Like, don't try and install on like Win8 beta, the RC release, because you may run into some assembly mismatches if you try and do that. Use all the latest bits, and you'll be happy.
Gotcha.
But let's do a file new project, and I'm going to create a new MVC 4 application and workforce chained into Visual Studio 2012 with our latest RC bits. Sure. Let's do MVC application. MVC application 2 is fine. You'll notice a couple things that are different here in the new project wizard. First of all, there's this new template called Basic. And it's actually not new. It's been there before. It used to be called Empty. We got some feedback for a while that, you know, Empty really should mean empty. So that's what we did. The new Empty project template is actually devoid of content. It's a clean slate. You can get started really fast and just add only the pieces that you want.
Okay.
So new empty template, we are listening.
Really, really empty.
Really empty. This one is empty.
Cool.
Also,
got a bin folder, that's it.
Let's look at Web API. I'll do, let's create a simple little contact manager like app. So again, new MVC 4 app. If we look at the Web API project template, you'll notice that the create a new unit test project checkbox now lights up. I can select this and then get a project set up that will have all the required NuGet packages included in the template. It'll give me some simple unit tests to get started with, so I can easily get going running unit tests against my Web API controllers, just like you could with your MVC controllers.
Excellent.
So I'll go ahead and do that. One notable omission you might see here is that there is no SPA template in the release candidate bits, single page application, ASP.NET single page application template. We shipped it with the beta. We are still actively working on it. It's in our Coplex site. You can go find the code there and follow our development there. It just wasn't quite ready to ship with the final release, so we did pull it out, but we are still working on it. We hope to get something out maybe by the end of the year is about the time frame that we're looking at.
Cool. So if you wanted SPA, it's not gone. It's just still clicking.
Still clicking. So, I mean, single page apps are quite hot now, and we're still definitely still looking at that scenario.
Good to know. Good to know.
So let me create a new web API project with a unit test project to show you what that looks like. And that went ahead and pre-installed a whole bunch of NuGet packages for me. Hopefully a little faster than it did in the beta bits. The project creation was a little slow in beta. We've been working on making it faster in RC. We continue to make performance improvements there, so hopefully that'll be pretty snappy. If we look here, I now got a contactmanager.test project that sits beside my web API project. And the web API project looks very similar. I was given a simple web API controller, this values controller, which if you've seen the beta bits, you've seen that before. If I look at the test project, though, it's got all the right references, so I can write test code. And it's given me some simple tests that do the obvious thing. There's new up the controller, call the actions. One of the nice things about Web API is it was designed for testability from the get-go. We don't depend on any static context. You can just new up things, mock out the your dependencies, and invoke the controllers. Let's look at the actual Web API project a little bit. Things have been cleaned up a bit. If you look at Global ASAX, it's a much smaller set of code than it used to be. And in this app start folder, you'll notice there's these new config files. The bundling and minification configuration, like what are all my bundles, the filter list and the route configuration are now all factored out into separate files just so that your application's Global ASAX stays nice and clean.
Nice.
So they're not gone. They're just moved if you're wondering where they've gone. All right, cool.
Were there actually complaints about having too much in the Global ASAX before? Some people wanted that?
Yeah, some people were saying it was getting a little messy. They wanted to have a little bit more factoring control and not have a whole bunch of, for example, bundling configuration mingled with the rest of your what is your actual application logic. Gotcha. It seems more like infrastructure.
Okay, makes sense.
All right, I'm going to create a new model type. Let's do class. This is contact manager, so let's call it a contact. And let's go ahead and add some simple properties to this guy. let's do a contact ID. And what I'm going to show you is that Web API actually now supports any framework-based scaffolding.
Excellent.
That values controller that you saw, it's nice to get going just to try a Web API, but it doesn't actually have any back-end data store, doesn't do anything really interesting. Let's create one really fast that does. Let's have required. I'm going to give it a name. That's probably enough. All right, I'm going to build. Build succeeded. Okay, so now I have a simple model, a contact model. And what I'm going to do is right-click on controllers, add controller. And in the add controller dialog, let's call this contacts controller. In the controller templates, you'll notice that there is this new API controller with read-write actions using Entity Framework. I'm going to select that. I'm going to pick my model type. Not that one. There it is. Right. And then let's create a new data context. Yep, that looks good. Contact manager context, sure. Fine, add. And then what this is going to do for me is it's going to create a Web API for me, a Web API controller that already has CRUD actions set up on it. Get, post, put, delete. Get all the contacts, get an individual contact. It'll have all the database logic already wired in, error handling logic. So I have a convenient place to start.
Awesome.
That I can then take this code, modify it, and use it to get going.
Awesome. And as you learned last week on the show with Rowan Miller, you could probably use the EF migrations features to actually build your database on the fly using something like CodeFirst.
Yeah, right? as your model changes, mm-hmm. using my migrations will let you continue to migrate the data from one version of the schema to the other.
Excellent.
For a really convenient workflow.
Excellent.
Let's take a look at what the code that it generates, because it is a little different than beta. There have been some changes and improvements to how the logic works. One thing I'll call out is this new create response extension method. And it sits off of the request. This request property comes from the base API controller. Let's see, we're deriving from API controller, just like you would expect still. That extension method, and I've lost it. There it is. We'll take the request and we'll build a response for you. And it will do actually a set of things. It will run the content negotiation logic. So it'll look at the request, see what formats the client wanted. and it'll look at the formatters you've configured on the server, and it'll pick the most appropriate one. So that'll happen. It'll create a response instance, and it will take the object that you want to put in the response and create an object content for you with that formatter and populate the response and then give it back to you. So it's like about three or four steps that are bundled into that extension method, just so it's really easy to run content negotiation, get a response message and return it. In the beta bits, you might have done this using HTTP response message of T.
Mm-hmm.
And that was doing something similar, but it had a contract in the type that was kind of misleading. It made it sound like this was a response message that always had a T in it, always had a contact in it, for example. Right. When in reality, at any point, someone could come in and swap out the content with a new one, and then you had an HTTP response message of T that didn't actually have a contact in it anymore. So you would have to do if checks everywhere and make sure that, oh, well, is this an HTTP response message of T or the vanilla one, and write logic accordingly. We found that was pretty confusing, pretty inconsistent.
Mm-hmm.
So we've removed those types, and the code now just uses the vanilla HTTP response message type.
Awesome.
The other thing to notice is that we are still, this scaffolded code is populating the location header correctly for this post action. This post action is posting a new contact, so you're creating a new resource. HTTP says when you do that, well, you should do a couple things. You should, if it succeeds, you should return a 201 created status code.
Right.
And you can see that here. And when I create the response, 201 created is what that enum represents. But also, you should tell the client, where did you create the resource? And you do that by specifying a location header. And that means creating a link somehow. You need to actually specify a URI to where the new contact lives. Before, you were having to handcraft that URI, piece it together from parts. The URL helper on the base API controller will now help you do that. It has this convenient link method. This is similar to the URL helpers that you get from MVC. You tell it what route you want to use. You hand it the values of the variables that you want it to populate that route with. And then it will look at the request and give you a full absolute URI.
Excellent.
That represents the link to that particular resource.
It's a lot easier.
Yep. So nice link generation logic. You'll notice that these methods are calling into the mall state and saying, is the mall valid, before it runs the actual business logic. And we do have full support for validation in Web API now. Even if you're using our formatters, like our JSON formatter or XML formatter, which under the covers are actually using, serializers, which weren't wired up for validation, we now will run validation on top of the deserialized objects, so we can give you a full set of validation errors on the responses that you get back.
So if I were to send in a contact that had an empty name, it's going to blow up.
Should we try?
Sure.
Let's go ahead and give it a go. I'm going to run this. So let me grab the URL of where this guy is going to live. Localhost 8689. I'm going to pop up my favorite tool for testing web APIs, which is Fiddler. All right, let's compose a request here. I'm going to post. So I'm going to do a post. And I'm going to post to API. It was my contacts controller, right? So the convention is API / the controller name. And then let's say the content type is application JSON, and that's post to contact. So I think I had a name in there that was required. Let's do it the right way first and make sure that it actually flows through as valid, and then we'll try and make it invalid. So execute. Okay, my action got hit, so I'm in that post action. I executed a post action. F10, is the mall state valid? Yeah, it's fine. So it's going to add to the database. We'll just let that, we'll let that run through.
Do we have a database?
Maybe not. Do you see an exception get caught there? Not sure.
It worked.
Just took a little while. I think what was happening is that was the first call, and so any framework code first was creating the database, and there was a little lag
there.
Okay,
cool.
So sorry about that. Yeah, but that worked great. So we got a contact.
Right.
And that looked fine. Okay, let's try it again, but this time, no name, right? Like, I'll put, let's say, foo, here. So that should be invalid. Run again, we're back in the action. Let's check the is valid property. And it's false now, so it's no longer a valid mall state. If I drill in here, what is it? Like values, look in the value here, there's an error. Let's look at the actual error. You'll see required property name not found. You need to go fix that. So if I go fix that, then it'll work again.
Nice.
So there's full validation working. All of your standard data annotation attributes will work. You can leverage custom validation logic if you want and plug it into the system, and those will be honored as well. You can take this model state and do with it whatever you want. You could fail the request. You could even send back the model state to the client. We don't have any, in the RC bits, we don't have any facility to help you do that. But post-RC, if you're following us on CodePlex, you might have seen a new HTTP errors type go in that wraps the model state and will actually do the serialization for you. So it makes it really easy, actually, to send generic model validation errors back to your clients so they can use it.
That'll be convenient. That'll be super good. And by default, what serialization mechanism do you use by default now?
Default formatter is JSON.
Okay.
The default format is JSON, and we used to use the data contract JSON serializer.
Okay.
We do still support that, but we have now moved to using actually a third-party serializer called JSON.NET as our default JSON serialization stack, which is really cool. JSON.NET is very popular with the community. Actually, one thing I love to do is go to the JSON.NET CodePlex site. Because the author has a table here that highlights the set of features that JSON.NET supports and compares it to some of our framework serializers, which I know and love. I've worked on some of these serializers myself. But you'll notice there's a huge list of features that JSON.NET supports. All these lovely green checkboxes on the JSON.NET side. Lots of things missing in the other serializers.
Right.
The other serializers are great. They've done well, but they're in the .NET framework, so they move at a certain pace. The web is moving at its own pace,
right.
And we needed a serializer that could keep up and had the features that we wanted. You may ask, there was one red X on the JSON.NET side, and that's there's a nonsensical dictionary serialization feature that our serializers support. The dictionary serialization is a little weird that we do in the .NET framework. The serialization from JSON.NET is really clean. It supports enums. It supports preserving object references. It preserves dealing with cycles. Actually, I'd like to show. Let me show you what some of that JSON looks like.
That's just nonsense.
It's some of it is pretty bad.
I'm sorry.
All right. So here, what I've got is a simple values controller variant. Actually, let me stop it again. Let's show you what the controller actually looks like. Here's a different values controller, and I've created a little test type, and it has the standard set of the usual suspects for problematic JSON serialization. I've got a date time in here. I've got an enum. I've got a dictionary. And then I've got a values controller that has a get that I can get that test object back.
Gotcha.
All right, so let's run this. And I've configured this guy right now to use the data contract JSON serializer so we can see where we started. All right, let me go to that controller. I'm going to do a get, not a post. All right, let's execute. See what we get back. Okay, we got some JSON. Couple things to notice. First of all, it's not pretty printed. It's all on one line, and that's deliberate because you don't want to waste characters when you're sending things on the wire.
Mm-hmm.
But it'd be nice if I had a way to do that. There's no way to do that with a data contract JSON serializer. It doesn't support any sort of printing or indenting.
Gotcha.
If I look at the parsed JSON, a couple weird things. Well, here's the date, and you'll notice it uses this strange date, paren, big, long, crazy number syntax. A lot of folks would really like this to be an ISO format, what you would expect to see on the wire, as opposed to something that looks
different,
unusual.
Right,
yes,
right.
The enum serialized as an integer. A lot of folks would like to see this actually serialized as a string, Monday, Tuesday, or whatever the value of that enum was. And for the dictionary, like if you look at it in the raw JSON, here's the dictionary. It's actually a JSON array.
Mm-hmm.
Of these key value pairs where each one is actually key and then the thing and the value and the thing, which is really weird in JSON. You would kind of expect this to be just an object where the keys are the property names and the values are the values of the properties, because
right.
That's, looks like a dictionary.
Right.
How can we fix this? Let's try using JSON.NET and see if we can do better. All right, so first of all, I'm gonna switch back to using JSON.NET, which is the default. And JSON.NET supports pretty printing, so let's go ahead and enable that.
See, this is a this is really nice because not only are we, not only have we open sourced our framework, but we are welcoming open source contributions that we think are actually going to improve our framework into our framework and therefore just making everything better.
Yeah, it gets better for everyone. Nice. Like we contribute, the project gets better, everyone gets to take advantage of the improvements that are there. It's certainly not better than patterns in the past where maybe Microsoft would go in and re-implement something that's already there and the community uses and loves. Mm-hmm. It's a lot better for everyone.
Cool.
All right, cool. So I just first of all enabled pretty printing. Let's check that out. All right. Look at the raw. I've now got pretty printed JSON, so that's pretty nice. Look at the parse JSON. I get a couple of things already. First of all, you'll notice that my date time now looks like a normal ISO date time, so that's much nicer. Still got a problem here with the enum, but one of the great things about JSON.NET is it's really flexible, it's really extensible. We'll fix that really quick. The dictionary now looks sane. Like there's no these weird key value properties. I just have the name of the property is the key. So that looks great. Okay. But let's fix that enum issue. Oh, one other thing is that I've often gotten requests from folks that they'd like to be able to control the casing of these properties. Like .NET objects, usually you have capitals at the beginning, right? Mm-hmm. But a lot of folks would like when it's serialized to JSON, they'd like to see that first character lowercase.
Right.
And they'd like to just be able to do it across the board. With the framework serializers, you could go in and attribute every single member and change its name per member, but there was no way to do it in one big broad
chunk.
Stroke.
Gotcha.
With JSON.NET, there is a way to do that, so let's try and do that. If I go back to my configuration code, I'm just going to enable a couple of things. First of all, if I wanted to go back to the Microsoft date time format that the old serializer uses, I can do that with JSON.NET. I'm not going to because I don't like that format, but if you needed to do that because of like wire compat problems,
right.
you could do that. Instead, let's enable this converter. This is a converter that's going to take those integers from the enum and actually make them the strings. So they'll serialize in a nice way. And while we're at it, why don't we just go ahead and throw in this camel casing feature that JSON.NET supports out of the box.
Mm-hmm.
And this will go in and just across the board do the camel casing instead of the Pascal casing that usually .NET does.
Is that string enum converter a class that you wrote somewhere? Or
nope.
Is that a part
that's
of JSON.NET?
That's just part of JSON.NET. It's very configurable. There's a lot of pieces that you can just grab and use.
Wonderful.
Yep. So let's F5. Let's try our one more request. See what things look like now. All right, cool. So we got the date times I want using ISO format. I've got enums as strings. I've got the dictionary that looks right. Notice all the casing is lowercase at the beginning. This is the JSON I wanted. And it looks great. With JSON.NET, there's a slew of other features as well. It's got good perf characteristics. Mm-hmm. It supports binary JSON, BSON. I don't know how do you pronounce
BSON?
Bison.
Yeah, sounds good.
So pretty cool. JSON.NET is in the box and supported by default.
So basically, you can be as obsessive as you want to about your output.
Yep.
It's good stuff.
JSON.NET is actually not the only third-party OSS component that we are adding in this release. I won't show it, but if you're familiar with web pages, mm-hmm. We had added to the project template this idea that you can enable third-party logins, right? Like you can take your website and log in with a LinkedIn account or mm-hmm. a Facebook mm-hmm. account. And that was done with in the beta timeframe with a Microsoft-specific implementation. In the RC bits, actually, we've decided to go again with a third-party OSS component. It's called .NET OpenAuth,
nice.
And we actually use that for our implementation now for providing OpenID and OAuth 2.0 support.
Fantastic.
So lots of good stuff on the open source front.
Indeed.
All right, cool. One other thing, let's go back to Contact Manager just for a second. I've actually got a completed Contact Manager sample where I took Contact Manager and scaffolded and then wrote a UI on top of it. Let me go ahead and show you what that one looks like. Because one of the things I want to show you that's new for Web API and RC is this ability to create like custom help documentation. You know, when you create a Web API, there's no WSDL doc. There's usually no metadata that tells you what the Web API is. That metadata actually is usually a website. Like you go to the Twitter docs, and you learn how to use it that way. And usually those docs will tell you, here's all the URIs, here's the parameters you can pass, here's the HP methods that are supported.
Here's what's required, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, here's some like sample payloads of the what you need to actually send me in the body. When people are building web APIs, they frequently want to do stuff like that. And we've made that really pretty easy in the RC. What we did is we created a new service. It's called API Explorer. And you can go ask the runtime for an API Explorer, and it will give you a runtime description of your API. What are all the routes? What are all the allowed HTTP methods? You can tack in some documentation content in there. What are all the formatters that are supported? So you can go look at the supported media types. And then you can do with that data whatever you want.
Nice.
You can use it to build an MVC app. You can take it and serialize it and serve that up from a web API, and now you have a simple metadata format. You could use that for creating tooling. You can use it to create test clients, so you can have test client functionality. In this case, I went ahead and built a help documentation. That's this API link.
Oh, wow.
And I've got a nice UI that shows me, you know, first of all my URI space. I can get contacts, I can get individual contacts, can add new contacts, supports updating contacts, I can delete contacts. If I expand one of these, you see I've got all the information available to me. I know what the method is. I can put documentation about the parameters. This one doesn't happen to have any parameters. Here you can see example response formats. This is being generated by looking at that list of formatters, and then I gave it a couple of sample objects and said, well, here's an example list of contacts that someone might get back from the service.
Nice.
But I then use the formatter to actually produce the format.
Okay.
So this is really what it would look like on the wire given that sample object.
Fantastic.
So it supports JSON, XML. If you look at a different one, like getting an individual contact, here I now have parameters, so we'll get some documentation about the ID. This sample has a formatter that supports PNG. It's a custom formatter that I wrote. It only works for the contact type and only one contact type, not a collection of contacts.
Gotcha.
So it shows up here, but it didn't show up in the other place. So the runtime description knows which formatters are supported for which APIs. I can see example, image that it might come back with. I have another custom formatter that does a text-based format called vCard.
Okay.
This might be something you would load into Outlook or Gmail to import a contact into a communication application. I can see an example of what that payload might look like.
Cool.
Now, how did that get built? Let me show you some code.
That was my next question.
Yeah, let's go take a look at that. I'm going to look at my Ninject configuration, actually. This app's using Ninject as an IOC container. One of the cool things in RC for Web API is that we've made integration with IOC actually much better, much more seamless. In this case, this is the integration with MVC, which you're probably familiar with if you're using the Ninject MVC NuGet package, which is publicly available. For Web API, it looks a little different, but it's very, very clean. I have this Ninject dependency resolver. I wrote this one, but you can imagine there'll be a NuGet package just like the MVC one. I go grab and use it. Let's take a look at it and see what it looks like.
I think there's one for MEF out there as well. I think the guys have come up with one.
We've been working very closely with a lot of the IOC container authors to make sure that Web API and the popular IOC containers out there, AutoFact, Ninject, MEF, they all work really, really nicely together. One of the key features they wanted was this idea of a dependency scope. We've had this dependency resolver abstraction in MVC for a while, which was nice, but it was missing this notion of there are some services that I'm resolving that they're only valid within a given lifetime, like say for the lifetime of the request.
Mm-hmm.
And when the request is done, they all need to be disposed.
Gotcha.
And there wasn't really a clean way to do that with the existing dependency resolver interface. So we've updated it for Web API. And if we go take a look at it, you notice it has this new notion of beginning a scope, of creating a dependency scope, and all your services can then be tied to that. So that's pretty nice.
That's fantastic.
Nice integration with IOC. And I use that here to wire up the help page documentation. Maybe it's simpler to start with the controller. Here's the controller that has that API link, right? That API action, and it's the model for the docs is this this DOS instance, and that guy is a lookup from a controller description to an API doc.
Okay.
And that's the controller description is useful because it was a convenient way to group a set of APIs. Like if I have a contacts controller and a foo controller and a books controller and bar controller, then I can take all the APIs and group them together because they're all related to each other.
Nice.
Generally, the controller represents a related set of APIs. So I pivot based off of the controller description.
Okay.
And then I have a set of API docs for that given controller description. That's the model for the UI that you saw.
Nice.
If I look at how that model got created, that's what was in this Ninject configuration. What I did is I go into the configuration for the web API, and I asked for that API Explorer interface that I mentioned before, and it's pretty simple.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of wish I had. Can I just add it here so I can? I'd like to show it to you. See if we can. Yeah, great.
Cool.
So it's very simple. It just has a collection of API descriptions off
Fantastic.
Of it. And so these are the things that are going to tell me all about my API, the action descriptor, the actual runtime piece, the HP methods, parameters, the route data. It's all there and available, the formatters.
Awesome.
Okay.
It's a lot easier than running a README file over and over and over again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You can just auto-generate a lot of this mm-hmm. documentation. Mm-hmm. And actually, it's a pretty useful debugging tool. Like, I find some people aren't sure actually what their web API space looks like. When you get a bunch of routes and they get kind of complicated, you don't really know anymore what, can I send a request here or not? Looking at the generated API documentation, looking at the API description can really give you a nice view of it.
Yeah, it's a big time helper. So
yeah.
That's awesome. That's fantastic.
So I get the descriptions and then create the model from those descriptions.
Cool.
And here I just populate some sample objects so that I can do the sample payloads for the request and response. That's
nice.
All that's wrapping in there.
That's fantastic. So we're more open source. We're actually using some open source stuff. You've integrated Web API with EF and scaffolding. We've gone over some of the new serialization features. And
JSON.NET.
JSON.NET. And talked about the enhanced IOC support. Seems like you guys have made some big strides since the last time we talked.
There have been a lot of changes. I would encourage you, take a look at the release notes. We tried to enumerate all the major changes that are in this release, particularly if you're migrating like beta code to RC and you're mm-hmm. trying to figure out how to get things working. Hopefully, you should get some good answers there.
Awesome. Well, I don't have any other questions. I'm sure that they're going to have a lot of questions. And I know that one question that we had the last time you were on the show is, let me see the code. So do you think that you could publish your sample code somewhere?
Oh, absolutely. The contact manager for beta is already public.
Okay.
I will be publishing the RC version of contact manager, which I was showing here, as soon as possible, momentarily.
Okay. First, he wants to take a nap, and then and then we'll put it out there. And I think the last time we talked, it's ASP.NET WAC Web API.
Yes.
Okay. Is it still going to be there?
That's ASP.NET Web API is our homepage.
Okay.
That's where you can find videos, documentation, links to the samples are there.
Okay.
That's where all of our content will live.
Excellent.
And if you want to follow the development of the project, then go to ASP.NET webstack.coplex.com. That's our Coplex site.
Okay.
That's where you can, if you want to actually submit pull requests to contribute. If you find issues, you can submit issues in our issue tracker. If you have questions about development, you can post to those forums there.
Okay. And do you have a user voice setup specific for this, or is it still the same ASP.NET user
voice? We have a user voice for Web API. It's under the ASP.NET user voice site.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, now you can get started writing APIs for different devices. We would have shown you a phone sample, but we just rebuilt this machine, and we haven't installed the phone SDK on it yet. But just understand that you can use Web API to talk to virtually any device out there. It uses standard JSON and XML, and then if you want to do something different, you can write your own formatter, right?
That's right.
Cool. Well, thank you guys for your time, and thank you for your time. I'm pretty sure we're all going to hear some good stuff coming out in the next couple weeks, and now we're going to go relax because it's been busy.